Hey everybody, and welcome back to Steve's NRL Footy Tips for Finals Week 3, 2023. I'm your host, Stephen Westaway. We are in the business end of the season now. It's the final week of September. The four best teams in the competition are left standing, and they've been the four best teams all year long. The teams remaining, the Melbourne Storm, the Penrith Panthers, the Brisbane Broncos, and the New Zealand Warriors, are going to rip and tear, leave everything that they've got on the field this weekend to get to an elusive grand final. The Penrith Panthers going for three premierships in a row. The Broncos going for their first in 17 years. The Melbourne Storm looking to get back to the top of the mountain. And for the New Zealand Warriors, they're looking to get to only their third grand final ever and potentially their first ever premiership. It is going to be a spectacular weekend of football. It's been a great season of NRL 2023, and I'm glad that the four best teams remaining, the top four, are the final four duking it out to see who's going to be the premiers this year, because you always want the best teams to be competing at this time of year. It's going to be such a great atmosphere, both at Suncorp Stadium and at Penrith tonight, and I cannot wait for the action to start. I'm going to end the show this year, as in Steve's NRL Footy Tips, with 50 episodes recorded. And I want to thank everyone that supported the show this year. It's been one of our best seasons yet. I asked last week for feedback, for your advice on how I can make this show better. And there's been some feedback given to me in the past 7 days. I want to thank everybody that contributed in that. And rest assured that I'm working and doing everything in my power to make the 2024 season the best season of Steve's NRL Footy Tips yet. I've got intro and outros prepared. I've got more guests lined up. And sound quality is an important one for me. I've been trying to get that back on track and trying to make that a priority to, you know, make it the best quality possible that you guys are listening to the podcast with each and every week. And, you know, as I mentioned, feedback's always important. I love it. I'm going to try to make this show be able to come out every Tuesday next year. It's been a really busy year for me this year, but I want to thank everybody for hanging in, listening to the show. And, you know, it means a lot to me that I can sit there and talk about football every week and people, you know, value my inputs and appreciate my thoughts on the game, because, you know, I just love the game. I'm not a professional rugby league pundit or journalist, but I do have a passion for all things rugby league. So I want to thank everybody this year that helped the podcast out in any way. And next week on the grand final edition of the show, it's going to be one of the biggest episodes of the year. But we've got two huge games of football to preview. Who's going to make the grand final? I want to hear your thoughts when I post this podcast. Who do you guys think are going to be competing in the grandest game of the year? Let me know. We're going to get into it in a moment. But before we do, I'm going to name my team of the year for 2023 before the Dally M's next year. Before we get to that, however, please remember, you've done it all year. Last 2 weeks, it's important. Go subscribe wherever you guys listen to your favorite podcast. Steve's NRL Footy Tips is going to be there. It's whether it's Spotify, Apple Podcast, Anchor. The outreach and the love that you guys have shown me is unreal this year. Like the video, share the video. It all adds up. Like Steve's NRL Footy Tips on Facebook, the best way to stay notified of all the updates in the future of the show. And if that out of the way, the Dally M medals are next week, and I'm going to name my team of the year ahead of that. There's been a lot of contenders this year, but there's some standouts that I think deserve recognition at this time of the year for some great seasons. So let's get to my, aka Steve's, NRL team of the year. All right, guys, into my team of the year now, and I'm going to name my 1-17, and this is just my opinion. Let me know what you guys think. What's your team of the year? Let's discuss it. But at fullback, it's probably the hardest position to pick this year and in the last 5 to 10 years, because we are truly in the golden eras of fullback. There's been some huge standouts that can change the game with their run meters, their try assists. They have the ability to change the game. They're probably the most important position in attack other than the halfback on a rugby league field these days. So the men that I want to highlight, I think, have all had fantastic seasons. I'll start with Scott Drinkwater as an honourable mention. I think that he had a slow start to 2023, but in the middle he exploded and he really lifted the Cowboys and led them into the second half of the season where they tried to make an unlikely finals appearance. The Panthers were too good for him in the final year, final round of this regular season, ultimately sealed their fate, but I think that Drinkwater was enormous. And definitely deserves to be shouted out. I also thought Clint Gutherson was incredible for the Parramatta Eels, despite the fact that the Eels missed the finals after their grand final appearance last year. I thought he really led by example and got them through some tough times there at Parramatta. They went on a bit of a winning streak near the end of the season, but just like Drinkwater, ultimately wasn't enough, unfortunately, to lift his team into finals for 2023. The other four that I'm going to mention have all played finals football this year. I'll start with Kalyn Ponga. Now, if he played the full season, Kalyn Ponga would, without a doubt, be my fullback of the year. I think that what he has produced on the field this year is truly something special, something that will be remembered, like Jared Hayne 2009 at the back end stretch, or a Ben Barber in 2012. He really led the Knights in that 10-in-a-row streak that they went on at the back end of the season, which ended when the Warriors defeated them last week. But, you know, it was an incredible run. The amount of defenders he draws to himself really opens up the outside men, and he was enormous in 2023. I also want to shout out Chance Nickel-Klodstad. I think that he was an outstanding pickup for the Warriors. The Raiders probably didn't use him as much as they should have. I know he had some injury dramas at the back end of his stint there. He's looked like a new man at the Warriors. His combination with Sean Johnson has been unbelievable, and he's really unlocking that side in attack. And you know, he's always a handy defender there at the back there. Charles Nickel-Klodstad had another great season for him. So I'm down to two men, and I think they've been the two best fullbacks in 2023. My last honorable mention is Reece Walsh. I think that you know, it's been the signing of the year, him going back there to the Broncos. Unbelievable season. He is dominated in the NRL level, in the state of origin level, and I think that he will dominate in the postseason for Australia as well. He's been that good, and you know, he's without a doubt proven himself to be one of the premier fullbacks in the competition now. And to be honest, we didn't really hear much of Reece Walsh from him at the Warriors. He went missing in games. It hasn't been the case this year. Him and Adam Reynolds are the most influential men at the Broncos, and as you can see, they're fighting to get into a grand final this week. Tries. It's been an amazing season for Reece Walsh. And as a young kid, I think he's just got more and more to give the NRL. And if he can stay healthy, then he could be once-in-a-generation-like talent there at the Broncos, Reece Walsh. But my fullback of the year, I've got to go for consistency, and I'm going to go Dylan Edwards. This man has been one of the best players in the NRL for the last three seasons now, maybe four seasons going back to 2020. His influence for Penrith cannot be understated. Now, he scored 11 tries. He's got 5 try assists. His try involvements are up there as well. But what you get from Dylan Edwards that I love is hard work. He's always trying to get involved in the game. I mean, this man is almost up to 5,000 metres for 2023 with an average of 207 a game. Easily the best in the NRL. He's got the 13th most post-contact meters out of anyone, and I just think that it's been a terrific season, and his game just keeps going to another level every time we see him on the field. He's the second most important man at Penrith behind Cleary, and with Cleary's fitness, at times he is the most important man. The importance of starting the set where, you know, you can get a good set, you can put a good kick in, and then Dylan Edwards can still make you pay by running it back 20 to 30 metres. He is invaluable there at Penrith, and I'm glad that he got the contract extension at the start of the year. So Dylan Edwards is my fullback of the year. We'll move on to the wingers now. And you had the usual suspects as honourable mentions. Brian Toe, another terrific season. Same as Alex Johnston. Dominic Young's another one that I thought was terrific at the back end of the season for Newcastle. He scored 24 tries, and they're going to miss him when he departs the Roosters. But my wingers of the year for 2023, I've gone Jermaine Asako from the Dolphins, 24 tries and 244 points. Now, that's the first since 1993, I believe, when Mau Meninga did it, for an individual to top the try scoring and the points in a single season. 166 metres a game, 4.3 tackle breaks a game, and 1.3 line breaks a game. He absolutely has revitalized his career there at the Dolphins. There was fears that it could have been over. I mean, I doubted that he could come back to be a star in first grade after, you know, he had a decent stint there at the Broncos, but it was in and out of reserve grade. And he looked, in my opinion, before this year that his confidence got shot. And you saw it in the Dawn of the Dolphins documentary, if you watched that Channel 9 documentary. It was all about starting fresh and, I guess, kind of just restarting his NRL career and trying to get that confidence back under the master coach, Wayne Bennett. And I think that he has well and truly repaid the faith. An absolutely outstanding career, outstanding year for Jermaine Asako, and him and the Hammer For Doe there. The Dolphins have been the standouts this year. My other winger, Dallin Watene-Zelezniak, 22 tries, not too far behind Asako, 4 try assists. But what you get with Dallin, he went back to the Warriors looking for an opportunity, kind of like Asako, and he's really stepped up and made the most of it. 151 metres per game, 3.8 tackle breaks as well, and same as 1.3 line breaks. One of the best, if not the best finisher in the game. He can be lethal from anywhere in the field. He can change a game. His combination with Sean Johnson and Charles Hodge is absolutely outstanding. And yeah, you talk about feel-good stories. I don't think it gets any more feel-good than the re-emergence of Asako and Watene-Zelezniak as two of the game's best finishers and two of the best superstars in the game in 2023. All right, let's move on to the centres now. And another tough position to choose and to make a decision on what two should get the nod for me this season. But I've gone Stephen Crichton and Herbie Farnworth. So I'll start with Stephen Crichton. And I think everybody knows his big match ability, the ability to step up in big moments of big games. He's got 14 tries to his name this year, 15 try assists, though, as I think is the stat that is the most underrated. He often at times is able to set up his opposite winger that's on the outside of him, and he's known for his ability to just make things happen out there on the edges. 127 metres a year, it's been a great year for Stephen Crichton. Herbie Farnworth, I think, you know, has been outstanding, one of the most improved players in the NRL this year. He's signing with the Dolphins, I think, is going to be a massive one there up there at Redcliffe. Him and Flegler going there gives them so much more strike power. And imagine next year, Herbie Farnworth and the Heber in the centres. It's mouth-watering. 13 tries to his name, 3 try assists, 165 metres a game, and one of the best defensive centres, in my opinion, in the game. Farnworth's been great. I want to give honourable mentions out there. As I mentioned, Tony Staggs, Billy Smith, Campbell Graham, and Bradman Best all been outstanding, especially in Origin and the back end of the season there for Best. Campbell Graham would have been my centre of the year if not for the obvious sternum and back injuries that kept him either sidelined or limited in the back end of the season. The first 12, 13 weeks, he was without a doubt one of the form players in the NRL, and we all know his potential, and let's hope he can stay healthy next year. He's one of my favourite Rabbitohs players, no doubt about it. Speaking of Rabbitohs, we're going to go to my 5-8 of the year, and this is a position that I found really tricky. I don't think there's been a huge amount of standouts in the NRL in the 5-8 position this year. Luai has struggled for consistency. If you look at the teams that are left, I mean, Cameron Munster, in my opinion, probably his least consistent season in the NRL. I don't think he has been anywhere near the influence that he was last year. Still alive, the Storm, so they're going to need him to be massive tonight, but yet not, I don't think, team of the year calibre. Tyson Gamble was solid at the Knights, as was Metcalf at the Warriors, and as I said, Luai, he's had some injury dramas, not exactly consistent. Ezra Mamm, probably my biggest honourable mention. I think that he has had a great year at the Broncos, and his running game's been a good dynamic when compared to Reynolds. Fantastic game management. I think they complement each other really well, and Mamm's just going to get better as his career continues. But Cody Walker is, I guess, reluctantly my 5-8 of the year. I think that he had a disaster last month of the season, but he was in pretty good touch at the first half of the season. I think he was fantastic with his recall into Origin in Game 3 where the Blues lost. But because of CF's dramatic decline in their fall, I think a lot of people overlooked the good work that Walker produced for most of the season. Obviously, there's been a lot of off-field talk about his presence there at the Rabbitohs negatively. But 9 tries, 24 try assists, 81 metres a game, and he did the majority of the kicking. Ilias, I am a fan of Lachlan Ilias, but it's obvious that halfway through the year, he needed a break. He needed to freshen up. Demetrio didn't give it to him, so a lot of the pressure fell on Cody Walker. And, you know, I'm a diehard Rabbitohs fan. I'm not the biggest Cody Walker fan in the world in terms of me liking him as a football. When what he can offer on the field is enormous, and no doubt he can break a game open. But when, you know, he doesn't keep those emotions in check, and when he gets frustrated, he seems to struggle. But yeah, as I mentioned, doesn't take away CF's, a basket case at the moment. But that first half of the year, was enormous there for Cody Walker. So I think that that's enough to give him the nod. And my halfback of the year is actually my Dalian medalist of the year. I think that Sean Johnson from the Warriors has been enormous. Talk about a career resurgence. There was talks at the start of the year that Johnson should retire and give it away. And now he's going to play on next season. He debuted in 2011 as a teenager and made the grand final his first year. He could get there again this year, but the evolution of the football has been in full effect this year. Under Andrew Webster, he has definitely reinvented his game. He was all about the flashy plays early in his career. He's just become the ultimate team player there and leader at the Warriors with 8 tries, 29 try assists, 401 kicks. Again, majority of the kicking game is control with game management's, up there with the likes of Reynolds and Cleary. And 60 metres, running metres a game, which is a fairly decent for a halfback as well. I think that Johnson has had an enormous year, and just like Andrew Webster, I think it'll be a shame if he doesn't get a nod at the Dally M's. I think he deserves Player of the Year. I think he'll get it. And if the Warriors make the grand final this weekend, I think that we'll be looking at one of the great seasons for a halfback in 2023 when we're talking about Sean Johnson. So those were my backs in my Team of the Year. Let's get to the forwards now. Before we do so, please remember, like Steve's NRL Footy Tips on Facebook, I'm going to just take a bit of water break. It's only going to be a couple seconds for you guys, and let's get rip in to my forwards for my Team of the Year 2023. And I forgot to mention, honourable mentions go to Adam Reynolds and Nathan Cleary. Now, Reynolds has proven the Rabbitohs wrong every day, and they're bored in terms of being fit and still making a difference there. And he's the main reason why the Broncos are in the preliminary final. His game management is only probably second to one man in the NRL. He's been there before, done it before, and he's at the height of his powers there. And a great combination with both Meehan and Walsh there at the Broncos. He's a level-headed veteran that's got them in the position they're in. And the other one, of course, Nathan Cleary, if he was fit for the entire season, he'd be right up there with Johnson for his year. I mean, he's the best game manager in the comp. He is now going for a third premiership and a third premiership in a row at that, and is in elite company in terms of, up there with some of the best halfbacks we've ever seen in the competition. And he's still young, with plenty of football left. And, he's the key man at the Panthers. He's the main man. And if they're going to win the comp this year, it's going to be from the back of Cleary with the others playing support roles. But, in terms of front roles, their next position, it's one of my, in my opinion, one of the most important positions in the competition. Those front rowers, and again, maybe it's because I did play in the forwards when I was younger, but for Noah Blake and Payne Huss, I think have been the standout props for the season. Honourable mentions go to Joseph Tarpanay and Lindsay Collins as well, who dominated in the Orange Arena. But for Noah Blake and Payne Huss, for me, are just heads and shoulders ahead of the rest of the pack. I mean, unbelievable Adam Fanua Blake's numbers this year, 4,319 metres overall. That's 173 metres per game, 1,621 post-contact metres, the most in the game. He's great at just elevating your set early, getting out of trouble. You pass it to Fanua Blake, he's going to carry opponents on his back for 10 to 15 metres. That's why he's there. He 694 tackles as well. He's everywhere. He's even scored a few tries this year, 9 tries, 2 try assists, and, he's so influential to that Warriors side. And if we look to this weekend against the Broncos, he's such an important piece in them competing against the Broncos. He needs to take it to the Brisbane forwards and lead by example. Him, Tohu Harris, Mitch Barnett, they've got quite a job ahead of them this weekend. Payne Huss, he's played a couple less games. He's got a few less metres there. I think it's a few thousand less than Fanua Blake, but 1,507 post-contact metres, 187 metres per game, which is the most for any forward in the competition. He's only scored one try. He's not the try-scoring freak that Fanua Blake's been this year, but 592 tackles, 16 hit-ups a game, absolutely enormous, and 5 tackle breaks a game as well. So, it's just Payne Huss is young. He's leading this Broncos forward pack with Carrigan, and he's still got many years left in the competition, but he just seems to be getting better every season. My hooker of the year, it was a tough choice for me. My honourable mention goes to Harry Grant. I think that he's been below his best, but he's below his best is still a huge standout and quality player there for Melbourne. He's been pretty solid again this year, Harry Grant. But I want to give a shout-out with my hooker of the year to an underrated player. He's been
Crafting his trade there at New Zealand for a number of seasons, but I think this year he's starting to get the recognition, and that's Wade Egan. Averaging 35 tackles a game, he does a lot of work in the middle. The service from dummy half is usually crisp, and that's what you want. You want the quality ball to your forwards, and they've been able to get over the advantage line really quickly there, the Warriors. 6 tries this year, 5 try assists, 52 metres a game on average out of dummy half. He's always scheming for an opportunity, and, you know, when it all goes wrong, Charles and Sean Johnson, they can't get in the game. Wade Egan can be a difference maker, and I feel like, you know, in the hooker position in general this year, there hasn't been a huge amount of standouts, but I think Wade Egan's been enormous there for the Warriors. My second roles this year, Britton Nakora and Dave Fifita. Now, Nakora and his cover work for the halves at Cronulla, I think has been an underrated aspect of their past few years, but I think he's really stepped up this year. 110 metres a game, an average of 38 tackles a game. I think it was a bit of a breakout year for him. He's been the mainstay in that Cronulla side, and he's one of the leaders of the pack, him and Cameron McInnes and Finucane when he's fit. I feel like, yeah, he's maturing as a football player. Same with Dave Fifita. I mean, Fifita, we all know the brilliance that he's got in him. And 2 years ago, 20 tries in a season, absolutely unbelievable for a forward. But he has been accused of being lazy in the past, and defensively he kind of drops off a little bit. Hasn't been the case the last couple of years. And this year in particular, I've been really impressed by everything he's offered the Titans and Queensland when he's played for them. I mean, the defensive work's increased. He's still making 180 metres a game. 15 hit-ups. It shows you that he's not afraid to do the hard work. And he scored 8 tries, but he's got 10 try assists. And, yeah, I think that he's become less of a, you know, it's all about me sort of player, and it's everything about the team now, similar to Sean Johnson. And I think he realises now he's getting a little bit older, that he's a leader at Gold Coast. And him and Tino are the big factors in, you know, lifting that squad and making them a consistent finals threat. But, yeah, big season from Dave Fifita. And, yeah, he's a huge part of that Gold Coast Titans plan for the next 5 to 10 years. Honourable mentions in the second row has got to go to Keon Kalamatangi. Jermaine Hopgood's been really good for the Eels. And Jackson Ford has been enormous since going to the Warriors from St. George Illawarra. So, been a breakout year for him as well. He just missed out. Really unlucky not to be in the side. My lock of the year, Patrick Carrigan. He leads the Broncos and Queensland every time he takes the field. Over 100 metres a game. Influential link man between Reynolds and Walsh. He is such an asset there for the Broncos. And you can talk about his stats. We can talk about how he's averaging almost 40 tackles a game. But I don't think the stats do Carrigan justice. I mean, he scored his first try this year, for God's sake, and it was a huge celebration. I think he's got 2 now. But it's the presence and the effort plays, the small 1%ers that he always shows up with. When you look around and you need someone to have a big effort, Carrigan's always there. He's got a motor that won't quit. And, you know, there's plenty of great props in the competition. But him and Haas are just so influential to the Broncos side, and a big reason why they're dominating at the moment. Honourable mentions go to Cam Murray. He's always a tireless workhorse. He always gives his all. Been a great, you know, back end of the season for him. I think that he was one of their highlights, the Rabbitohs, in that disaster last month of the season. But he started the year a bit slow. Corey Horsbrough, another one. Great season for Canberra. Real breakout season for him. And you can't not mention Big Tino as well from the Titans. So that is my 1 to 13. My bench, I've gone Kalen Ponga. Again, the stuff that we've seen from him, you might not see again in your life. And this back end of the season, he was enormous for the Knights. I've gone Tino and Hopgood as my forwards on the bench there. And I've gone Reece Walsh in the number 17 jersey. So that is my team of the year. Yeah, it's been a great year in terms of NRL. A lot of standout players. So it was a tough list to make. But I think Sean Johnson deserves the Dally M medal. I mean, I'd give Andrew Webster the coach of the year. I think the rookie of the year, I'd actually go Lindsay Smith. I think he's been enormous there from Penrith. But I can see Taruva possibly getting it as well. Biggest disappointment, without a doubt, the Rabbitohs. I think the Cowboys actually up there as well. But you got to give it to the Rabbitohs. The Eels were really disappointing. And the surprise packages, the Warriors and the Knights. Unbelievable. And the Dolphins to a lesser extent. I know they finished the season off a little bit poor. But I think that, you know, everybody forgets because of that disappointing season that how good they were early. They lacked the depth. But with Herbie Farnworth and Flegler gone there next year, anything could happen there for the Dolphins in the next few years. So those are my little awards before the Dally M medal ceremony next week, I believe it is. But we've got two huge prelims to preview, so let's get to them now. And the action kicks off tonight, only a couple of hours away. This has been a little bit of a delayed podcast, so I apologise. By the time it comes out, you're only probably going to be an hour away from kickoff. But, you know, as I mentioned, plans are to get the podcast back on track next year and get it every Tuesday. It's been great content this year. I think that it's been an excellent year, but you know, it's been, life's getting in the way, and it's going to be great to refocus next year. But from a core stadium at 7:50 p.m. tonight, I forgot that it's not at Penrith, it's at Core, the big preliminary finals, Penrith Panthers versus the Melbourne Storm, and these two teams played in the 2020 grand final. Of course, that was the last time the Panthers didn't win the premiership, and the Storm survived a late scare in that one and won 26-20. This is going to be a massive clash. I mean, Penrith have been the benchmark for the last 4 years, but Melbourne have been the benchmark for the last 20. And, you know, Penrith almost look unstoppable. Jerome Luai's back tonight, early from the shoulder dislocation, so it remains to be seen how he goes. Because of that, Penrith have got the cover there and Cogger on the bench, but all your key stars back for Penrith. I mean, Targo's back, you got Luai. It's pretty much their full-strength side here tonight, and we know how good they can be and how good they've been all season. Finals, they're a different beast, and Penrith look as good as anyone I've ever seen in terms of going three-peat. They're going to be really hard to beat tonight, and Melbourne are going to have to be at their absolute best. They've got to upset Penrith somehow because, yeah, I mean, Luai and Cleary, they've been together for so long, and I know that the Storm will be running at Luai all night. We'll talk about that a little bit in a moment. But Cleary, I guess, game manager in the comp. Dylan Edwards is going to, you know, start their sets off well and take it back from the kick. So if you're Melbourne, you've got to try to find a way to eliminate him. The forward pack, you know, they've been superstars in the past. Leota, Fisher-Harris, Martin, Sorensen. They've got to do it again, make those meters early, get those key men involved. But yeah, I've got big fears in this game that Penrith could just blow away Melbourne early. I mean, their starts have been unreal. Their defensive pressure is just unbelievable. And that's the real question mark. How is Melbourne going to be able to score points against Penrith in this game? I mean, you look at just them in finals in general. If you go back for the last few years, you've got you know, in the 2021 grand final, you had them win, conceding two tries. They conceded two tries late against Parramatta. But this, it seems to be there's two different types of finals that Penrith can play. Is they a little bit poor to start with, like last year's prelim against the Rabbitohs, where they were down 12-0 early. But there's other games, like the 2022 grand final against Parramatta, where, you know, they can just blow teams early and they just can't match them. The Melbourne obviously need the first one. They need to be able to get into the grind and somehow put pressure on and keep Penrith in their own half. You need to negate those forward packs, those big boppers, Fisher-Harris, Leota, and Spencer Lenu when he comes on. And, you know, I feel like there is something there. Melbourne, the bookies are giving them no chance this week. They are heavy outsiders, the biggest outsiders they've ever been under Craig Bellamy in a finals match. But, you know, to doubt the Melbourne Storm side and some of these key players, you got Munster, you got Grant playing, you got Hughes, you got Welsh, you got Nelson Asofa Solomona. I think it would be foolish. And if you look at the two games this year, round 23, it was 26-6, Penrith beat Melbourne. Pretty convincing, pretty dominant victory. Same as round 18, where the Panthers beat the Storm at 34-16. But Melbourne started off well and had the lead in both of those games. Tonight, Melbourne are going to play for each other. They've got to leave it all on the field. And they've just got to tackle like their life depends on it. Because, you know, Penrith are going to be coming at them. They're going to be coming at them for 80 minutes. And there is no let up that Penrith give you. Because, as I said, when Fisher-Harris or Leota goes off, you got Lenu and Lindsay Smith coming on. Those front rolls are so crucial for Penrith. Because if they get over the top of opposition, the key playmakers in Cleary, Edwards, Luai, you got no chance of stopping them. They're going to score points, and they're going to score a lot of them if they're dominating a game. But the onus is really on Bellamy to get his forwards lifted and stop Penrith and negate their metres that they're gaining per centre. The only way, the only chance Melbourne have tonight, they've got to stop and even slow down the ruck. Do whatever you can to slow down that ruck and get your forwards over the advantage line. They probably will start with Kamika and Welsh and try to get Nelson off the bench, but that gives you such a job for Welsh and Kamikamika. They've got to do whatever they can to start the game off on fire, and you've got to get Katoa or Lorero running lines at Luai and Cleary all night. It's in particular Luai. I mean, the shoulder injury, is it 100%? We don't know, but what we do know is that if you see any sort of weakness in Penrith, you've got to try to expose it, because they're just one of the greatest sides that I've ever seen in my life in terms of just stepping up in the big moments. And yeah, this is going to have to be the performance of their lives for the Melbourne Storm. And I think if Melbourne in somehow cause this upset tonight, then it'll reaffirm Craig Bellamy as one of the greatest coaches we've ever seen. But I don't see any reason why Penrith can't get to the grand final again. As I said, Penrith probably only had to play to 70 to 80% of their potential. We've seen some incredible performances in finals bottom, but we've seen some performances where they haven't been at their best and they've still won the game. I think they'll be up for it, obviously, because they're trying to get to that fourth grand final in a row. They're going to have to be hard to beat. As I said, for Melbourne to beat Penrith, they've got to put the points of their life, and you need Hughes fully fit. Is he fully fit? We don't know. We need Munster at his best at Melbourne. You need Harry Grant picking off these tired defenders, but Penrith don't give you many chances. So when they get them, you've really got to take full advantage of them. I mean, last week and the week before, both the first 2 weeks of finals, I know Melbourne got over the Roosters last week, but it wasn't convincing. A lot of errors, and if you lose that much possession, if you don't take advantage of your sets, you're no chance against Penrith. So for mine, the first 20 minutes, absolutely crucial in the game. If Melbourne can stay with them, or at least keep Penrith out in that first 20, they're going to get plenty of confidence. Then we might have a game on our hands. But I think there's a real possibility that Penrith can just blow Melbourne out of the water early. I think the Accor Stadium fact actually helps Melbourne a little bit, that it's not at Penrith. They're probably 40 to 50,000 up there tonight. And, you know, that actually might help Melbourne, because, as I said, Penrith at home, almost unstoppable there at Blue Bet. But, yeah, there's a chance Melbourne win, but they've got to find a way to get one-on-one with Luai with that shoulder, and they've got to find a way to negate those forwards. And that's through hard work. You need Kamikamisha, Welsh, and Nelson, Asofa Solomon to have the game of their lives. Sims and Eisenhuff, you need to give him more minutes. Sims, I mean, only got 10 last week. He could be a big difference maker in this match. But, yeah, you got to cut down the penalties. You got to kick for the corners, in my opinion. Take Dylan Edwards out of the game, and you got to hang on to the football and make the most of the opportunities. You can't keep giving Penrith anything, because Penrith are just too damn good. They're just great at what they do. And that's why tonight, you know, I think we get a Cleary masterclass. I think we get Dylan Edwards. If he makes anywhere near 300 metres, then Penrith are well and truly on top. And I don't know if Melbourne are going to be able to stop that constant momentum of the forward pack. I mean, even if they can stop Fisher-Harris and Leota, then Lenu and Lindsay Smith, one of the most underrated props in the game, they come on and they can just change the game in an instant. So, yeah, I just feel like Melbourne, they're going to try hard. They're going to compete. And I think we can get a game on our hands tonight. But I just think Penrith have got too much strike power in the forwards. And, you know, if we look at what they do when they get field opportunity position, Yo, Cleary, Luai, Edwards, they're all in sync. They've played together for years. They're going to take the most of their opportunities. And I think that, unfortunately for the Storm, they'll be eliminated and Penrith go through to their fourth consecutive grand final. I've got Penrith by 10. But I think if Melbourne can survive that initial 15 to 20 minutes, we can have a real contest on our hand. I think there will be low scoring tonight as well. I think that defence is going to be on the forefront of both teams' mind. Penrith always graded it, but I think Melbourne and Bellamy has really focused on that this week. I think shutting down Penrith's key men is important, but negating that forward pack and, you know, trying to get some momentum of your own, I think that every point's going to be crucial here tonight, but I just think Penrith have got more firepower. So I've got Penrith by 10 points and getting through to the grand final. So I've got the Panthers making the 2023 grand final, but who will they be playing? Well, up there at Suncorp, 7:50, Saturday night. It's one of the best grounds to watch football live at. The whole state of Queensland, they're going to be behind the Brisbane Broncos. Their first prelim for 8 years, they're going up against the New Zealand Warriors. And I honestly think this could be an absolute thriller. I mean, the Broncos, they're coming off a week off because of their dominant win over the Storm in week one of the finals. And they've had 2 weeks to prepare for this. But their opponents, the Warriors, it was a great win. 40-10 over the Newcastle Knights last week. The return of Sean Johnson, I think, completely changed the Warriors. I think they were fluid in attack. They had so many chances week one against Penrith to score points. They couldn't do it. Their defence tightened up, and I just think they came out of the block so quick. And that, man, I think the Broncos could be in some trouble this week. Now, Brisbane, you got to tip your hat to them. They've been one of the best, if not the most consistent team all year, especially in the forward pack, getting over the advantage line. It's why they've made it so far. The likes of Huss and Flegler and Carrigan. It's been incredible. I think Walters was enormous in the Storm game 2 weeks ago. They really give Mann, Reynolds and Walsh a lot of time to come up with the right play, to get them in those opportunities, you know, in the opposition's goal line. And, you know, Walsh is a superstar. Mann's taking the line on well, and Reynolds is just a perfect game manager. So it's a great combination. So if you're Brisbane, you just want to keep doing the same thing. You don't want to change a thing, but... you know, the Warriors have a knack of being unorthodox, and they bring Sean Johnson back in. That connection that he has with Chance Hill Clodstad, like the set plays, the 1-2 punch. They're an unpredictable side with the football in hand. And if there's one side that I think can go head to head with the Broncos in terms of their big forwards, it's the Warriors. Barnett, Fanua, Blake, the prop of the year. Tohu Harris was enormous last week. Jackson Ford and Nikore both having great seasons. Ford's a real breakout season. It's going to be a great contest up the middle of the pack. I think this is anyone's ball game, and I think that, you know, I always say this game, these games are won in the middle of the field, but it truly is going to be an epic showdown there on Saturday night. And, you know, I don't think the Warriors are going to be fearing the Suncorp effect too much. I mean, we know that the Broncos are going to be the overwhelming favourites and the overwhelming popular vote up there at Queensland. But the Warriors, they build so much support up. The rest of the, I guess, the sporting world's behind them. The entire country of New Zealand's behind them. And, you know, they're playing with a nothing to lose mentality. Sean Johnson shouldn't even, if we go back to the start of the year, even be playing in the NRL anymore. A lot of people want him to retire at the start of the year. They're just playing with this energy, kind of similar to what the Warriors did all the way back in 2011 when they upset Storm in the prelim and went on to the grand final that year. I just feel like something special could be coming, and I feel like the Warriors are just such a genuine chance. And to do that, as I said, the forward pack need to get the momentum. But even if you look at the one-on-one battles in this game, Walsh versus Chandler Clodstad, we know how good Walsh has been this year, but Chandler's just, his combination with Johnson has been enormous. He's a hard worker out there in terms of meters gained, and he might not be as flashy as Walsh, but he makes up for the hard work that he does. You know, you've got the younger players there in Mann versus Martin in the halves, the less experienced one, and then you've got the old veterans, Johnson versus Reynolds. I'm looking forward to the showdown. I just think that this has the potential to go all the way potentially to Golden Point. It's probably the most excited I've been for a game all season, to be honest. I think that this, could be an all-time classic finals encounter. And I know that everybody's, and a lot of people think the Broncos are going to be too good, but yeah, I just got this feeling. I've got this feeling about the Warriors that, you know, maybe I'm buying into the hype, but I just feel like something special could be around the corner. And that's why I'm leaning towards the Warriors this week. I think it can be a Penrith versus Warriors grand final. I think Sean Johnson could be the man in the moment and really solidify the year that he's had. And, you know, Walsh, Reynolds, you know they're going to step up if they get in a clutch opportunity, especially Reynolds. He's done it so many times in the past. But, yeah, I just feel like the Warriors are a team that won't go away. And I don't think Brisbane are going to have them all their own way, because I think the forward pack's going to be ready for them. And as great as Huss and Carrigan is, I know it's a blasphemous thing to say, but I just think the Warriors can come up more fired up than the Broncos. I think the week off for Brisbane might actually hurt them here. The Warriors are flying with that momentum from last week, and I think they can use the emotion to their advantage early in the game. We saw them go off to a 16-0 lead against Newcastle last week. Don't know if it can be that effective, but I think the Warriors are going to start like a house on fire on Saturday night, and it's just that the Broncos can contain it. I think Brisbane might take a little bit longer to get into their game, and that might give the Warriors the advantage. So I'm going to go the Warriors by one. I think it could be an epic finals encounter, and that means I've got the Panthers versus the Warriors in the grand final. I hope you guys enjoy your football this weekend. Huge grand final show coming up next week, so make sure you check that out. Enjoy your footy, guys. We're almost at the end of another great season in the NRL, and I'll see you next time on Steve's NRL Footy Tips.